Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 75. I hope everyone is good, getting ready for spring and summer. I just got back from vacation. I went to visit my brother. He lives in Atlanta. I live down in South Florida. So my main problem is being a worrywart. Is when you get stuck in traffic and worrying about going to be late for the plane, I'm going to lose my money for my ticket because I buy the cheapest possible seat that I can get, and there is no refund. So if you're late, you're out of luck. So I think I'm getting an early enough start, but it seems like it takes me a long time just to do anything. So, and then in the traffic, it's backed up. Then I start worrying and I almost have a minor anxiety attack until I get to the airport, get on the plane, and then go ahead and go where I'm going. I don't fear flying. Flying part is pretty neat, really. I always get a seat by the window so I can look out over the whatever I'm going by. From Florida to Georgia is a pretty nice flight because you can look at the ocean or the Everglades, and it's pretty neat. So anyhow, my trip went well, and I came back, and I'm still on vacation for about 3 or 4 more days. So I haven't put out a podcast in a while. I've been slacking, so I thought I'd better put something together. I was talking to Russ. He does the Techie Geek podcast, about how sometimes it's hard to get motivated to do the podcast. For me, I think it's because I know that it's going to be time consuming once I get the podcast done, is that it takes time to, for me, it takes time to edit the podcast, to upload the podcast, to maybe add some pictures and some, do some research to find links and stuff like that. And ahead of time doing the podcast takes some time to prepare because you want to kind of think about what you're going to do for the podcast on. When I do these interviews, I have to come up with a list of questions for the whoever I'm interviewing. And then I have to run it by them because I want to make sure that it doesn't, you know, the questions aren't stupid. So that takes some time. And it's just, you know, back and forth emails and plus just getting somebody that's willing to do it, because a lot of people, you know, they don't want to be interviewed. They don't want to go through the trouble because it is kind of a pain unless you enjoy, you know, doing that kind of thing. Some people love it. They want, you know, they want to let people know what they're doing and what they're working on and stuff like that. Other people would just soon be left alone. So out of all the requests I do, I would say maybe 1 in 5 the people are willing to do an interview. And then once that happens, they say, okay, then it's a matter of tracking them down and getting them to read the questions and then setting up the time to do the interview. And then that starts the, once the interview is done, then the more work begins as far as uploading the podcast, editing the podcast, adding links and pictures and show notes and stuff like that. Updating the website. So, updating the feeds. I like doing that kind of work myself. I could have maybe just a WordPress blog and just let it do its thing, but I kind of like being hands-on with it. Anyway, not only is it, to me, it looks a little bit nicer, but I like the fact that I'm learning along the way. I'm learning how to do all this stuff from the ground up and not just letting WordPress or something do everything for me. But that's just me. It seems like that I'm getting more lazy here, so maybe something like that would be in the future. Speaking of lazy, for this podcast, I couldn't think up of much of anything to do it on, and I have a couple interviews I'm hoping to put together here sometime, but they haven't, I'm not going to be doing them yet, so I figured I needed to do some kind of podcast, so I was thinking, today, when I was sitting around doing nothing, well, I say doing nothing, but I'm still working. Right now, my current little project is on Gen 2, we're getting ready to go from Python 2.6 to Python 3.0. It's not going to happen anytime soon. I'm thinking maybe in the next 2 years, maybe. But in the meantime, there's a whole lot of packages that need to be checked to see if they're compatible, and maybe the e-builds need to be edited to reflect the fact that these certain packages will not work with Python 3 and above. So that, I've been working on that a little bit. There's always something to keep you busy. Basically, what I do with the Gen 2 stuff is I stay involved, and then it doesn't seem like it's very long until something kind of perks my interest, and I figure that'd be a good way for me to help out. It's something that I feel that I can do. It's something that I feel is needed, and I'll ask other developers if they, you know, think it's a good idea, and then I'll move on and start doing my little thing. I enjoy the testing of packages and tracking down bugs and stuff like that. Since I'm not a professional coder, I know a little Python, a little Bash, but nothing that you could earn a living doing. So this is my way of being able to give back. Back on the prospect of this podcast, I thought it'd be a good idea. I don't think I've ever done it before, and I'll try to be as objective as possible. I'm going to go to the DistroWatch website and go down the list of the distros and kind of give you my 2 cents worth. So now, remember, now this is just my opinion, and please don't bash me too bad. Now, if I make a blatant error, or even not blatant, but even if I make an error in one of my comments, please go ahead and email me at david@linuxcrazy.com. And even if you just want to say hello, email me at david@linuxcrazy.com. Also, you can find me most days and nights on IRC, and that is on the IRC server Freenode, and it's the channel #/ Linux Crazy. Stop by, say hello. If you have any questions, you know, go ahead and ask away. There's usually a few other people there that hang out, and they run other distros, not Gen 2. One fellow, TK109, he's a Red Hat guy and also a Fedora guy, and also I think recently he's using Arch. Russ is usually around. He's a Ubuntu guy, and there's other fellows there and maybe a couple girls that are using other distros than Gen 2. So they could probably help you with your question or lead you in the right direction if you have a question. Okay. If you go to linuxcrazy.com, like I said, this is podcast number 75. My regular desktop computer, I have a dual screen, and I like that because I can usually keep one screen on IRC, or maybe if I'm doing some Python programming, and the other screen, I can usually have Firefox open and run around the web and check an email. Lately, I've been using Evolution for email. I got away from Thunderbird. I used to use Thunderbird all the time. Here lately, I got away from Thunderbird. I'm using Evolution because its encryption works on it. The encryption wasn't working on Thunderbird 3 and above for me. So I've gotten kind of used to Evolution now. I've been using it for a while. It's slower than Thunderbird, but it's once you get kind of used to it, it works fine enough. I leave it open all the time while I'm here. So when it checks for email I got it set up for every 15 minutes. When it's actually checking for email and running the spam assassin filters on it, it kind of takes a little while to download the email messages. My main account is an old account I've had for a long time from bellsouth.net. And I don't use it with Gen 2 or any of the Linux stuff, but it's my old email address, so I keep it alive. It's got some of my banking stuff tied to it and that. But Bell South has now gone with AT&T, and AT&T is hooked up with Yahoo. And when they hooked up with Yahoo, their servers are slow. So you can tell poor Evolution is working to get a response from the Yahoo server, so it just sits like it's just hanging there. But it's not hanging, it's just the Yahoo servers are slow as molasses to give you a response back. And then evolution is a little bit slower in spam filtering. So once the messages are downloaded, it takes a little bit longer than Thunderbird used to do its thing. So what was I going to do? Oh, that's right. What was I going to do? I was going to go run through the DistroWatch. All right, let's go ahead and head over to DistroWatch. And I will go through all the distros and give you my little 2 cents worth. Rank number one is Ubuntu. Now, Ubuntu is a great distribution. I myself will install it on especially laptops for people if they want to, if they're interested in using Linux. So it's a good way to get a quick install done, and also one that's almost 99.9% chance that just about everything is going to work. They do a great job at Ubuntu. I don't know if I can think of any complaints. I like apt-get. I'm an old Debian guy, so anything with apt is fine by me. I really can't think of anything wrong with Ubuntu. No, it's a good distribution. I like GNOME, so that works out fine. I would never use a, for some reason, from way back, I think it's from when I just first started out using Red Hat. I started out with that Red Hat 9, and it had GNOME. And I just always kind of liked GNOME better than KDE, even back with the KDE 3.5 days. And I've tried KDE 4, but even back with the KDE 3.5 days, GNOME just fit my personality, I guess, more. It's more, it's bland, and I just liked the way it always liked the way it looked. I never did like the KDE look with the rounded stuff, and I never really liked Conqueror. I always liked Nautilus for file browser. I always liked the terminal for GNOME. I always kind of like GNOME better. So that's what I've been using. And once you get used to something, then you stick with it. So there's people that got started with KDE, and that's what they're used to, and that's what they use, and they love it. So it's just, hey, listen, at least we got a choice. We got lots of choices. I used Fluxbox there for a long time in one of my stages, and then somewhere along the line I went back and using GNOME, and I really liked just how easy it was to the drives, when I plugged in a USB drive, it automatically mounted. And I know I could have done all that with Fluxbox too, but one day I did a new install of Gentoo, and I went ahead and installed Fluxbox. And Fluxbox, for me, to get it looking and reacting the way I really like it, and getting the terminals and everything all set up the way I want, takes a little time. And GNOME, you could just install it. It would take longer to install, but the actual personal involvement of editing configuration files, creating configuration files, setting up Conky, setting up all the different things that you want in Fluxbox, it just took longer than just installed GNOME, and it was pretty much usable out of the box. So I've always been a GNOME user, so Ubuntu uses GNOME, and so that's fine by me. Like I said, I like Ubuntu. Ubuntu's done great things for the Linux community. It's really gotten Linux out there. It's great that the actual Ubuntu distribution has some backing, financial backing, so they can actually push their weight around a little bit and get things done. And it's nice that they're able to pay some of the developers so that they can spend, full time developing, which is, you get these really good guys, you want to keep them in the open source community, but hey, they got to make a living too. But what a nice marriage to be able to pay them to do what they really love to do and help out the open source community along the way. A lot of the fixes and great enhancements that Ubuntu does gets passed down to users like me that don't even use Ubuntu on a daily basis but use Gentoo. A lot of the testing, a lot of the fixes, we get able to use once we figure it out. So number two on the list is Fedora. Now Fedora is a very good distro. They another one that does a lot for the open source community, because they are the kind of testing ground for the Red Hat. And here lately, I've been reading about how well Red Hat's been doing as far as making money. They've got themselves a really good niche with the corporate world as far as having cloud computing and being able to integrate with Windows servers and systems. I'm not real knowledgeable on all that, but it seems that they are. But as far as a distro, Fedora, I've always liked Fedora. It seems to me that it's been a little bit, when I've installed it, I can't really be too judgmental because I haven't installed it in a while. I think I tried Fedora 12 maybe for a minute or two just to see what it looked like. And it's always been a little bit buggy for me, Fedora. And so I never really stuck with it for very long. But I'm sure there's ways of fixing it. But I like the fact that they are enhancing the kernel a lot. They do a lot of work on the kernel, and they're doing a lot of work on that Pulse Audio, and they do a lot of work on a lot of different areas, and a lot of it is groundbreaking. But it is a little bit, I want to say, buggy for the time being. They're not afraid of putting something out there that's going to break, because that's the only way to get it tested. So if you're going to use Fedora, it seems to me if you're going to use Fedora, you're going to be doing some testing. So I don't know how reliable it is. And I didn't really like the idea that it's changed now, but in the old days, like if you went from like Fedora 9 to Fedora 10 to Fedora 11, you would have a problem during that upgrade. You would break all kind of stuff, so you almost just had to do a reinstall, back up your home directory, save everything, and then just go ahead and do a reinstall to go to the next version. So I don't know. And I've used Red Hat before, and it's on the other scale. It's got, for my taste, it's got a lot of the older programs in it. So I like something. I don't want something cutting edge as far as it's going to be breaking. I mean, I don't think anybody wants anything that's going to be breaking, but somebody's got to do the testing. But I like something that's kind of been tested a little bit, as far as, I don't mind a few minor bugs, but what I can't stand is freezing and stuff like that. And before, when I ran Fedora, I would get a lockup sometimes. So, but it's been a long time since I used Fedora. It's not even really a objective criticism. So take that with a grain of salt. The next one is number 3, which has surprised me, is Mint. Now, I know Mint, or I was pretty sure it used to be. Mint was based on Ubuntu. Linux Mint is based on Ubuntu, I believe. I really should have done some better research on this, but my idea of Linux Mint is it's a dressed-up version of Ubuntu. So my way of thinking is if it's a dressed-up version of Ubuntu, I'll probably just install Ubuntu and dress it up myself. But then again, I don't know too much about Mint. I've never even installed it, so this is not a very good review of Linux Mint. OpenSUSE, that I have used. I've used SUSE from back from the 9.0 days, and I have always been a little bit annoyed with SUSE, because I always had trouble with their package manager. I forget what the name of it is now. Oh yeah, not so much their package manager. Well, their package manager too. I guess it's they use RP. It's RPM based and that, but that YAST. Oh gosh. I used to pull my hair out with Yast. That thing would freeze up right in the middle of some big upgrade. And I certainly hope they've gotten all that figured out. I used to get a good install with SUSE. It'd be working fine. And then somewhere down the line, it would be some big upgrade come along. And I'd try to do, or even I would just try to configure something with Yast. And it would lead you all over the place. Very confusing to me. And then it would lock up. And you're just about ready to throw the whole thing in the trash. Which is basically was my last experience with SUSE, say, was with, I believe it was my IBM laptop came with OpenSUSE 10.0 Enterprise Edition. And that darn thing, it was installed, so it booted up the first time. It didn't make it past doing its initial configuration. The first thing it wanted to do was go to do an update. And when it went to do the update, it couldn't find the key, or it said that the install was illegal or something like that, and it wouldn't do the update. And that pop-up kept popping up that they wanted me to go and pay something for them. In fact, this wasn't even OpenSUSE. I think this was the real SUSE Enterprise Edition. But I saw that wonderful Yast screen again, and it didn't take me probably 15 minutes, and I put Gen 2 on it. So that'll just let you know my thinking of SUSE. So I'm sorry if I offended anyone. That's just what's happened to me with SUSE, was with Yast. I think I would have rather just had do your own configuration with a on the command line and just tell you what files to edit or something, so at least you know what's going on. My problem is that when something hangs up like that and you don't know what's going on, how do you go to fix it? You have no idea what to do. Or I didn't have any idea what to do to fix it. You just sit there and you wait and you wait and you wait. And my patient intolerance isn't the greatest in the world either. So I would just be getting more mad and more mad. And finally, I would just go ahead and shut it down and install something else. That's what happened with me in OpenSUSE. Or no, really, the last thing I used was that SUSE Enterprise Edition 10. All right, next one on the list at number 5 is Mandriva. Now this, I really like Mandriva. It can be a little buggy too with the RPMs, but it seems like the developers are really trying. I know the one guy, Colin, that I did an interview on my podcast, he's working, integrating the sound, getting the sound working good on Mandriva with the Pulse Audio, doing a lot of testing. And I kind of just like the way Mandriva looks. I installed it on a buddy of mine's computer because that's what he wanted. And it wasn't too awful bad. So I kind of don't like the idea of the way they do with trying to make money on it. But I'm kind of getting away from that a little bit, too. There's so many distros you can use that are free, and you don't have to worry about them bugging you for money, is that these ones like Mandriva that are actually trying to make a living, hey, a lot of guys that will be actual developers for Mandriva and make a little bit of money, they jump back on with Fedora and do a lot of the work for free. So, you know, it's nice that there is a way to get guys paid to do some of the development work. So, I mean, everybody's got to live. Everybody's got to eat. Everybody's got to pay rent. A lot of people have children and everything else that goes along with just life on life's terms. So, I don't mind supporting different distributions. And I try to get back to Gen 2. I try to get back to GNOME. I try to give back to a few other things, too. So, okay, the next one on the list is Debian. I mean, what's not to love about Debian? I mean, from way back, I used to install Debian because I'd get a fast install, especially with the minimum, you know, they call it like a business card ISO or the install CD. I always kept an install CD on hand. I could install Debian in about 15 minutes, and you'd have something to work with, and then from there, their documentation is really good. It's a strong community. It's a bunch of developers, strong, smart developers in Debian. So it's an excellent distribution. it's the backbone of Ubuntu. It's the backbone of Memphis. It's the backbone of a few other distributions that are Debian-based. So I've always liked apt-get. So Debian is one of my favorites. PC Linux OS, don't know a lot about it. I think it's based on, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I think it may be based on Mandriva, slicked-up version of Mandriva. Not exactly sure. The next one on the list is Sabian. Sabian is a distribution, binary distribution based on Gentoo. The main guy there of Sabian is just recently in the last 6 months has become a full Gentoo developer, which is nice for both Sabian and Gentoo. He brings a lot of his bug fixes and everything to Gentoo. And Gentoo naturally helps out Sabian because Sabian is based on Gentoo. So it's a nice relationship. He has developed Sabian to make the Gentoo install a little less painless for newer people. They could get a nice desktop pretty fast. His graphics has always been real nice. The only one little problem you may run into with Sabian is that it's got it's running some stable packages and some unstable packages, and I imagine some of the stuff is patched so that you get a really nice slick install off the beginning, but which in the long run you may run into little problems down the road when you start mixing with the Gentoo repositories. I think Sabian has its own repositories now, so that when you update and everything, you can use just the Sabian repositories and keep your install pretty much stable. But I don't use it, so I can't say for sure. But it's a nice distribution, and it gives you a nice install. Arch, excellent distribution. Arch, I used to use Arch for a while. Always liked it. It was always rock solid. I never really had any troubles. The Arch community is very Linux intelligent and knowledgeable, and a lot of their documentation and even on their forum I'll use a lot of times to help me figure out stuff with Gentoo. Now Arch is a binary distro, and when I say binary distro is that the packages are already pretty much compiled and everything, and all you're doing is installing it, which Gentoo is a little bit different because you actually compile everything on your own. The benefits, there's some benefits on both ways. Gentoo, the benefits are is that some of the packages you can really fine-tune the for your particular hardware and your particular use. But does it really help you that much? I'm not really sure. It does make you able to learn how Linux works underneath. I know that's for sure. So Arch, excellent distribution. If you're moving from like a Ubuntu, you're starting to get tired of a Ubuntu or Fedora and or OpenSUSE or Mandriva or even Debian, and you want to try something that's a little more difficult but gives you more control over all the configuration and everything, but pretty much rock solid, give Arch a try. You'll enjoy it. Memphis, excellent distribution. This is Warren Woodford. I used to use Memphis when I first started using Linux way back, and he's a pretty good guy, pretty smart, intelligent. He does some very good front-end and I'm sure back-end work for Memphis as far as making the configuration easy for laptops, for wireless, for just about everything. He's got a really slick installer. Memphis is a great distribution for people that are new to Linux, if you want to get a really nice, clean, quick install. And especially Memphis is good for people that like KDE. It's usually KDE is the, well, I'm pretty sure it always is. KDE is the default window manager. And it is usually very, very stable, sometimes being so stable that he doesn't run the latest and the greatest stuff. But if you want a good, solid install that just about everything is going to work out of the box, and you're new to Linux, or even if you're an old pro and you just want an easy, nice, quick install, then Memphis is a great one to give it a try. Puppy, I've used Puppy on some older laptops. It's a very nice little distribution. Most people have heard of Puppy. It's a small little, I think it's a live CD. I think you can install it to the, you can install it to the hard drive. I think, like I said, I should have done more research, and correct me if I'm wrong, Puppy, I think I used it as a live CD on some older laptops, but not, I can't really remember. FreeBSD, I've installed it before. It was a little harder for me because I'm, you know, used to Linux and the way Linux does things, and BSD does things a little bit different. I don't have any big complaints. It was really solid when I installed it. It's just I didn't really understand a lot of the stuff, and I spent so much time learning Linux, I didn't really feel like spending a whole bunch of time learning FreeBSD. Okay, next one on the list is, I believe I'm up to Slackware. Well, man, now here's one that I really enjoy. Slackware is one that I did my one of my first installs, and I was overwhelmed with the idea of partitioning the hard drive. So luckily, on the web, I found this website that showed you how to use FDisk to partition the drive to do the Slackware install. It took me a couple times to actually do the install because I would do something wrong along the way. And I think it was what I was doing wrong was I was probably telling the installer a partition that I thought I had created and I didn't, or I had put the wrong file system on it or something. No telling what I did. But I did eventually get it Slackware installed, and I used it for probably about 6 months. It was a good way to learn Linux. It's a no-nonsense distribution. You have to pretty much do all the configuration yourself. It'll give you a stock install that's pretty much very similar to whatever Upstream is producing. Slackware doesn't come with any, didn't come with any pretty GUI configuration tools or anything. So it's a good way to learn the nuts and bolts of Linux. Very solid, very, very, very solid distribution. I mean, you can install Slackware on a server and pretty much just forget about it. Except for just having to install security updates. The kernels have always been very, very solid. Very nice distribution. They have actually the Slackware book has excellent documentation. So you could move from a Ubuntu to a Slackware and really learn the ins and outs of Linux. I'm not saying that you couldn't do the same thing with Ubuntu. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are very knowledgeable. I'm sure using Ubuntu. I mean, there's a lot of slick people. Just for someone like me, it's kind of, I need to be forced to learn the ins and outs. So by running a distribution like a Slackware or a Gentoo or an Arch, it kind of forces me to learn the inside and of the way Linux does stuff. And also forced me to learn some of the basic bash commands because I was going to have to do some stuff on the command line. So that's Slackware, excellent distribution. Slackware's number 13. Now I'm going to speed up a little bit because I guess I'll try to keep this podcast at, let me see, how long is it now? It's at 35 minutes now. So I'll try to keep it, I guess around 40 minutes should be good, or 45 minutes. I'll go down here. Number 14 is Ultimate. Here it's got a arrow sign where it's going up. Never even heard of Ultimate. Let's see what Ultimate is. Never even heard of it. Ultimate. Ultimate Edition. It's based off of Ubuntu. It's a fork of Ubuntu. Never heard of it. Ultimate Edition 2.5. It's moving up. It's number 14. CentOS, been reading a little bit about, maybe they're having a little bit of trouble internally, but CentOS is a distribution based off the latest stable Red Hat. So a lot of people like CentOS because they don't have to spend the big bucks. They can install a CentOS and basically have a Red Hat install so they can learn all the way Red Hat does stuff so they can get jobs out in the corporate world. Tiny Core, never heard of it. That's number 16. Number 17, poor old Gentoo, moving down the scale as usual. Gentoo is not one that is going to run up the scale and compete with the Ubuntu or a Fedora or Mandriva or a Debian or anything as far as popularity, because it is not easy to install, and it takes a little bit of time. If you're going to use Gentoo, make sure that you want to invest a little bit of time in your Linux distribution. Gentoo is an excellent distribution for learning the ins and outs of Linux. It's a great community. A lot of people are very knowledgeable that will help you learn more about Linux, and also you'll learn to do some pretty neat stuff along the way. But it's not easy, and it has its own way of doing things. There's a lot of tools to help you, but you have to learn how to use those tools also. And you can make some pretty serious mistakes along the way if you do something that you're not supposed to. So it's not an easy install. If you have a Core 2 Duo, you probably can get it installed in a day. Because it's not so much the time of the installing, but it's, you're just going to have to set up just about everything from the kernel up into your desktop environment. You're going to have to do some work along the way. The next one is PC-BSD. I never used it. Kubuntu is the KDE version of Ubuntu. Nopix, old standard CD. I've used Nopix from way back. In fact, one of my first installs was Nopix. I booted up Nopix and liked it so much after getting so mad at Windows one time that I went ahead and searched around, and Nopix, you could install it to the hard drive. And I went ahead and installed Nopix to the hard drive, and then I wanted to learn some of the apt-get commands, so I did an apt-get dist upgrade and completely broke everything. So, because Nopix is a little bit like, it's a little bit like a Savion, as far as Savion is based on Gentoo, but it's got a lot of its own patches and its own, it's usually some stable and some unstable packages together to get everything working really well and really fast. And Nopix kind of does the same thing. It's a Debian-based distribution, and it'll use a little bit of some stuff from stable, from unstable testing, and put it all together. So when I did that dist upgrade, I mean, it just completely broke everything. So it was unusable. So that's when I think I went and I installed my first time installing Debian. So the next one on here is Crunchbag. Crunchbang, I think that's a, I'm sure somebody will have to correct me. I think it's a, here, let me look. It's a Ubuntu distribution. Oh, yeah, based with using OpenBox. I've heard a lot of great things about Crunchbang. For you people having older hardware and want to use a Ubuntu distribution, as far as it'll install quick, mostly everything will work, but you'll have the quickness of OpenBox. Crunchbang is the one you would like to go. PCOS, never heard of it. Zenwalk, heard of it, but I've never used it. SIDUX, never heard of it. TinyMe, never heard. Vector, now I've heard of Vector. I think Vector is a based on Slackware. Yeah, based on Slackware. Basically, they've just kind of tweaked a Slackware install a little bit as far as making it suitable for a little less powerful or older hardware. So here is eLive, never heard of it. Dream Linux, Backtrack, GOS, that's the Google operating system at number 30. Red Hat at 31. The only reason Red Hat's at 31 is going up. The only reason Red Hat's at 31 is most Linux users are out for a free ride, and so they don't want to pay Red Hat. So. Clear OS, never heard of it. Xbuntu, that's I think that's the one that's based on, yes, XFCE distribution of Ubuntu. CHAKRA, never heard of it. Ubuntu Studio, now I installed that on a buddy's of my computer because he likes to record music, plays the guitar, records. So you install Ubuntu Studio. The only problem he had with it is that, back to that Pulse Audio stuff, there's a little bit of tweaking as far as getting it to work well, is that Ubuntu Studio had Pulse Audio on there. It's a little too early. I think what I'm going to have to do with his is, I got it working, but it's not perfect, and he wants something perfect. I need to get him another sound card. His mic and everything is good. He's got a USB mixer and everything. That's fine. But his actual sound card is just the HTA Intel. So what I want to do is get him a really good sound card so that it's not so much software mixing. It'd be more hardware mixing. And I think a later install of Ubuntu Studio will do him some good because Pulse Audio is getting more and more mature all along. I've noticed that on my desktop too. I use Pulse Audio, and it's right now on my desktop, I'm not having any more trouble with Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio is working perfect. I can play a flash video, I can record, and I can listen to something else all at the same time, and it's working just fine. So I'll keep my mouth shut, so hopefully nothing happens here. So Ubuntu Studio, a Ubuntu distribution earmark, or I forget the word I was wanting to say, specifically for people that I know there's got a GIMP on it and all that, and you know, for graphics, for music, for stuff like that. Open Solaris, not familiar with it at all. Lubuntu, now we're getting to stuff that I have no idea about. The only one down here is number 44 that I know, is System Rescue. That's excellent. It's based off Gentoo. It's a live CD, and you can do a lot of different stuff. It's got a lot of great tools on it, a lot of great open source tools on it. Slacks, I've used it before. It's based off Slackware, I believe. Yeah, it's a live CD. They're very, very slick. Works fantastic. I've used it. Put it in a laptop, boot it up, and it's you get right online usually. So Clonezilla down here, I did a podcast on it before. It's a live CD for cloning disks, working with hard drives, and doing backups. On down here on the list, I see Zandros way down here at 65. Never used it. Wow, it's a lot of distros. Solaris is down here, 83. Gparted, it's got a live CD. It's for partitioning your hard drive. I've used it before. It works good. All right, well, that's my little review of Linux distros. And please go ahead and email me and straighten me out. And I'll in the next podcast, I'll go ahead and do a little update as far as updating all the facts that I'm sure that I messed up. So I hope you all enjoyed the podcast, and I'll see you for podcast number 76 is next. Bye-bye.